It's 12 Enough, Season 8, Episode 10A, with your host, Jonathan Malone, and guest host, Jamie Washam. Twelve Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your host, Jonathan Malone, is the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Jamie Washam is the pastor of the First Baptist Church in America, in Providence, Rhode Island. This podcast is brought to you by the religious affections of Jonathan Edwards. I mean, he really, really loves this podcast. It's a lot of affection, but only in a religious context. We don't want to be unseemly. And we're back. We're now going to hear the deep conversation I had with Jamie Washam about forgiveness, and especially in the ecological sense. So how we can ask the earth for forgiveness, or how we bring back some kind of harmony or balance in our relationship with creation, and how that also impacts our relationship with God and with each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to rehash the whole conversation right now, but it was a good conversation. And I hope you enjoy it, and thank you very much for listening. I realized that, you know, we had this whole introduction. I talked to you about you being from Texas, I almost said Kansas, sorry.
Not the same.
No, not even close. Mm-hmm. Not that I would know, but I would imagine it'd be offensive. We didn't even talk about you being the pastor of the First Baptist Church in America. Do you want to say anything about that, or you want to just let that lie where it is?
It's still pretty new.
Right.
And
not the church. You being the pastor.
Yes,
there.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a brand new church. Church plant.
It's been great so far. It's a lovely group of people who are... I think they've survived this long because they're willing to do new things.
That's great.
And to try stuff. And I have great colleagues, and I can say, hey, what do you think about this? And they're like, sure, let's give it a try. All right,
nice.
Well, we'll give it a try. And I do wear very sensible shoes because that is a very steep and narrow pulpit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here, there's a sermon in this somewhere. When the lectern where you put your notes, it's about a story up, and it's short and wide.
There's got to be some kind of sermon there.
Right?
Right.
Your sermon ought to be, you know, short and wide. And then it's not going up those steps that's going to get you. It's coming down. And so every week I just hope that's not the one where I wipe out and end up with no teeth.
Right. It would be great if you could pull a Chevy Chase from Saturday Night Live where he'd always just fall. Yeah, if you could figure that out. I know that sometimes they would wear like a wetsuit to get padding. You know, think about it.
I will tuck that away.
And when I'm that's such a polite way of saying no.
So
if you could do it liturgically too. If it could be
acrobatically,
but still
and liturgically,
but also funny.
Well, it will be funny.
Could be funny.
I guess. I mean, but it's steep.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Do you have a litany of curses you will yell when you start falling? That you have planned or no?
I do not have that planned.
That you should probably work on.
I sound carries and words
well,
reverberate.
Well, that's why you should have
and
those.
And we podcast our services, and I find, you know.
If they can't hear you yelling out, cursing while the fall, all they hear is the tumbling.
You know, maybe it's sort of like some of the marriage advice my husband and I got when we were just married from a friend of ours. He said, it's okay to yell. In your marriage, that's totally fine. Just never use words.
Oh, nice.
Right? So every once in a while, one of us will hear the other saying, you all right there? Oh, I'm fine now. Anything you need to talk about? Nope. So, nice. You know, so maybe that I'll just have a barbaric yawp when I start the tumble.
I think that'd be good, too.
I think that might be the move.
That'd be good. Right. Let me know when you're going to do that.
No.
I'll take that Sunday off and come to see
that. Because yeah, we're going to need you that next Sunday.
Right.
Because I can't get a hoist.
I can only take one Sunday off. That's the thing. So
well,
I want to see
choose
it.
Choose wisely.
Yeah, right, right. You can find someone else to preach for you.
But it's been good so far. Good. My key still works, so.
Hey, that's great.
Right.
That's great.
They're letting me back.
Yeah. And this is, you know, so folks, for folks who don't know, this is a very historic church. Roger Williams was the pastor there for a little bit.
Right, until he determined after maybe 5 years that the Christian church lost all its authenticity when Constantinople saw that gleaming sword cross in the sky.
Right.
And he kind of went off. But he always had love in his heart for the First Baptist Church. And I have to say that having that kind of formative story is a total gift for a church, because you've got this guy who was willing to push bounds,
right,
who didn't fit in, who lived in a tree until the Narragansetts saved him. You know, so we have this opportunity to think about who we are now through that lens, and I think that's what's continued to be invigorating, because they can say, well, what is our formative narrative? Who are we? I mean, in addition to being Christians, but in this particular Christian community. So that is pretty exciting.
Excellent.
But I was hanging out with a friend in Massachusetts recently, and he said, well, when was your church started? And I said, well, 1636. He goes, yeah, well, I've got 1630. I was like, why you got to be like that?
Is it Boston? First Baptist Boston?
Congregationalist. UCC. Cambridge. Yeah.
Oh.
So I was like, all right, I think it was your people who persecuted my people,
yeah,
and that's why
right.
we went to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
And I was his
yeah.
house guest, so I let it alone.
You didn't take out one of your microphones and drop it right there?
I did.
You did? You're like, again, see this mic? It is dropped.
Job loss.
Job loss. If you're going to buy microphones, buy them in bulk.
Because I keep dropping them everywhere I go.
Yeah, right, right. They break. And I use ceramic mics, which is great when they hit the ground.
Wow.
I know, right?
Wow. You clearly don't clean up after yourself.
No, I run. Mic dropped. Out! Like, who was that?
You know what I'm going to do at the end of this podcast?
You're going to drop a mic?
I'm looking at your delicate equipment.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's not job lot.
If you just get some feedback, then you'll know.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. So, folks, you'll know why. All right, so we're here, though, to talk about, what are we talking about? Forgiveness, but more than that.
Yeah. I am interested in creating a more robust theology of compost, if you will. And what do we do with waste? What do we do with the stuff that we...
Oh, there's so many puns!
Right, just do it. Just throw them all out.
No, no.
You're saving them?
I'm saving them.
All right. But, you know, but I think...
I will met them out. Yeah. Very carefully. Mm.
Well,
with discipline.
With discipline, very good. Well, I just feel like, I mean, it can be a way for us to think both literally and metaphorically about all these things. I mean, I take pretty seriously this idea that we're Earth.
Okay.
And
from ashes you were made, and ashes you will be.
Right. I mean, okay, so it's appropriate that we're having this conversation on Ash Wednesday because,
right.
I don't know, do you compost?
Yes, I do, actually.
All right. And so what are the key elements to compost, my brother?
Oh, gosh.
Come on.
I didn't know there was a test to it.
You can edit this out later.
No. So, I mean, for what we do, we use yard waste.
Okay.
Especially the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to chop them up ahead of time so I compost better, but grass too. But all of our non-cooked food stuff,
mm-hmm.
so eggshells, rinds,
right?
You know, all of that. Any dirt helps
mm-hmm.
compost. When I understand mm-hmm. worms help,
right?
Letting all that stuff happen. The thing I enjoy the most throwing in a compost,
okay,
fish guts.
Really?
They compost like in a week.
Interesting.
Gone so fast. It's just
do you
exciting.
Have a closed bin, or do you just put it in a hole in the ground?
We did. We made a chicken wire.
Oh, sure.
A round thing with chicken wire,
mm-hmm.
so that it breathes.
Right.
I don't turn it that often.
Mm-hmm.
I know the more you turn it, the better.
Mm.
It's
There's
good.
Different schools of thought.
Oh, good. Yeah, and I know mm-hmm. if you keep it moist, that's good.
Right.
But you know,
right.
I don't spend that much time on
mm-hmm.
it. That I'm, you know, but every year or every season, so every beginning of the summer and beginning of the fall, what I do is I empty it out and put it to another pile
okay.
that is almost dirt,
mm-hmm.
but not quite, and
right.
I start the compost over again because it's just not enough room.
What do you grow in your garden?
This year, nothing.
Oh.
We let the land go fallow.
Well, that's very biblical of you.
Right. If it was 7 years, yes. But it hasn't been. Mm-hmm. You know, vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm. Well, so thank you for that. I mean, yeah. So we see that that's stuff that you would otherwise not have use for.
Right.
You would be getting rid of it.
Well, I'll tell you, so the thing I love the most, sorry to interrupt.
No,
but the thing that where it gives me a sense of grace, here's where the grace is.
Okay.
You know, I buy a salad mix.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I'll open it up and I'll eat it, and then not eat it for 2 days,
mm-hmm.
and it starts to go bad,
hmm.
and then I'm left with this conundrum, like, oh, I don't want to throw it out. Like this was pre-compost, PC,
okay,
the PC era, and now I'm PC post-compost. Keep up.
I'm with you.
So yeah, before I would throw it out, or you know, we buy fresh vegetables, and they start to go rotten. You're like, mm-hmm. and you feel awful, but now I don't feel as awful because at least they're getting composted.
It's like the time my husband went to a sustainability conference, and he saw these people who they had this huge buffet of organic, locally sourced, et cetera, served on compostable corn-based plates.
Oh, gosh.
And he saw people just heaping up piles of plates and not eating it and then just putting it in the compost. And I think his head was about to explode. I mean, so I am delighted that it's not going into the landfill. But
right. I don't buy vegetables saying, like, I'm going to let these rot and throw it in the compost.
Well, I do think that one of the most radical things we can do is just eat our leftovers.
Well, I try to eat my leftovers, but sometimes it's just...
No, I hear you. I hear you. But that is grace. Right. Like, things that would have just been utterly wasted before aren't now, and they can be transformed, and they can create life.
Exactly, so that helps.
But through this sense of, I mean, we're talking on Ash Wednesday. It's all about repentance, turning.
Right.
Well, that's what you do. Like you say, the more you turn your compost, the more rapidly perhaps we're able to make this transformation. But there's also something to just letting it be.
Mm.
You know, have you ever planted seeds with children who want to go dig them up and see how it's doing?
No, I yell at them.
Well, that's one way, but it's not...
I'm very strong with the shame-based parenting.
It's not effective. You know, there are some things you just have leave alone. And I think that's part of the work of healing and forgiveness. Sometimes you do need to turn it, but perhaps not all the time. Sometimes you just have to let it be, and it will do its own work without you in there all the time.
So, all right, so this is the first time we actually brought forgiveness into it, when you said that could be the work of healing and forgiveness.
Right.
Sometimes... Working at it, but sometimes letting it be.
Right. I think there's both aspects to that. That, you know, you mentioned that the fish guts compost pretty rapidly, but other stuff takes a while.
Yeah.
You know, rinds. I mean, you'll have that grapefruit rind in there for a while.
Eggshells take forever.
They do. And so some things will break down more quickly than others. Some things are easier to work through than others. Some stuff is going to... It's just going to... You're still going to see that for a few seasons. And I think it is... naive to think that we can just say some magic words and go through a five-step process and suddenly be done. I mean, I think of forgiveness as something very cyclical that we maybe have to tend to the same way that we do the soil.
So that's really interesting. So let's bring the relational part of forgiveness in there, in this, because I think it was kind of there,
mm-hmm.
but not overtly.
All right.
So, you know, because usually, not always, but, you know, when we're talking about forgiveness, people think I have wronged someone and so, or they've wronged me. And so there's forgiveness needs to happen between, you know, in some kind of relational context.
Right.
Right now, the common practice, what the predominant notion is, you know, you go and you say, I'm sorry, and they say, and this is what we teach our kids, say, you're sorry, I'm sorry, okay, good, we're good, now we're done. And you're saying that might not be it.
Well, I think that there's two different conversations about forgiveness. There's the one who does the forgiving and the one who is seeking forgiveness.
Right.
And for the sake of this conversation, I'm perhaps more interested in the one who's doing the seeking.
Okay.
And if I stomp on your foot and I tell you I'm sorry and I'm still standing on your toes, that doesn't seem very legitimate, right? So
yeah, it doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't feel good. Yes. Yeah, so I think that this there's things that we don't use words like penance very often as Baptists, but there's work that is to be done. And you know, sometimes a good apology does that, but that the work of getting ourselves ready to even ask for forgiveness, and in some ways that work is irrelevant to the end game. I mean, whether that forgiveness is granted or not, that work is still meaningful in and of itself.
So let's talk a little bit about that work that might need to be done prior to the asking of forgiveness.
Right. Well, part of it is there's an interesting study by a woman named Katharina von Kallenbach called The Mark of Cain. And she has this really interesting reading of the story of Cain, and she uses that as a lens to...
But this is from the Bible, right?
Right, right.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Yeah.
From Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel.
Okay, yeah,
Cain
I'm
and
with
Abel.
You now.
Right. And so she did a study of Nazis after the Holocaust, and she found that most of them, unless forced to confront their wrongdoing, really just never looked at it. And so her assertion is that we have to sometimes be compelled to own our own culpability. So I think that's the first step in seeking forgiveness, is that you have to admit that you've done something. Because I'm not going to seek forgiveness if I think I can actually see better if I'm standing on your foot, because I can get a little higher, right? So if I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. Besides, it's just your foot. I don't feel anything.
And I got two of them.
Right? And so, you know, so you have to sort of be forced to do that and to look at that and to own what you've done. And I think that's the first piece of it, is just having that come to Jesus moment where you are real honest with yourself and you could admit that and you can see what you've done and what you perhaps ought to have done. And then I think the what I would call like the practice of forgiveness or the work of forgiveness is recognizing that and then beginning to either make amends or apologies or to make a significant shift in one's own behavior and one's own.
So to show, so have some kind of, there's the turn.
Right.
So that first part though is owning that you've done something wrong. That's hard.
That is hard.
I don't like it.
Nobody likes it. Yeah. And, you know, and so von Kallenbach has this idea that when Cain killed his brother and God puts this mark on him. We don't know what that is.
Right.
But it's the text tells us that it's so that no one will kill him.
Right.
And take revenge on him. And criminal justice system, take note. It's worse to live out the rest of your days rather than just be killed quickly in retribution. I mean, I think the work of Cain was to have was that he had to keep living, and he was this agricultural farmer guy who was now cut off from the land, and he was fated to go, you know, live in Nod, to wander around, and so he had to start over. And we see later that he founded cities, and his grandchildren were progenitors of the arts and culture, and
so he did all right,
stuff like that. Well, yes, but then he had a great great grandson who was even worse than him. Like, you know, keep reading the Begats.
I skim those. I always gloss over the Begats.
There's some juicy stuff in there if you actually see who they are. But anyhow, you know, the idea is that this mark of Cain was this way of forcing him and others to reckon with this on a regular basis, and so it wasn't enough that he just felt badly. It was that he had to do this ongoing transformative work to try to remake himself and his place in the world, maybe as that process of forgiveness.
Right. Those emotions of guilt and shame. You know, I joke, like, I do shame-based parenting. I don't know. I don't have a school of parenting that I do. It's more of like just...
I'll talk to your kids later.
Yeah, just survive today.
You've got a school.
It's just survival parenting. Try to make it... But those emotions of guilt and shame, which are often seen as very negative emotions, can be very powerful and can be helpful in that self-retrospective, self-reflective kind of process. It can be overwhelming. I mean, and you can overdo it.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't say live there, but it can be
a
useful tool. Right. It can kickstart things.
Right.
And I mean, because I think that ultimately, those negative emotions can be difficult to have something generative come from them, but something can. But von Kallenbach talks about how you can kind of wallow in your shame or in your guilt, or you can do what she calls meaningful action or constructive action, where you use that energy and you channel it into something meaningful.
There's the composting.
Exactly. So you can throw it in a landfill and it can rot, and then we can cement over it and build a new neighborhood.
Right.
For a lot of houses that look the same, or you can do something that will create new soil and new life through time and the humility of the earthworm and darkness and turning and patience. You know, so I think that there's this idea that we can, I mean, but she would say even maybe more tangible things, like you can go and rebuild communities that you tore up, or you can do justice work, or you can channel it into ways that not only transform you as the perpetrator, but perhaps can also do something that would positively transform the lives of those that you have harmed.
Right.
Maybe directly or indirectly. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with them. Maybe the most gracious thing you can do is to leave those people alone, or whomever it is you've harmed, and to leave them be and not subject them to your process of repentance and penance. I mean, maybe that's more painful to them. I mean, that...
Right, right. You know.
So that's why I think that these are in some ways distinct processes. And if someone, after all of this, grants me forgiveness, that's some beautiful gravy. But the process itself was meaningful, whether or not that was ever granted.
So that's interesting. So I'm going to push a little bit to say, you know, part of the forgiveness is an attempt to reclaim the relationship in some, or to, so, you know, let's say, you know, you step on my foot and you say, gosh, I'm really sorry, but or you don't say sorry, you step on my foot and you walk away. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow morning, you're like, well, I probably shouldn't have done that. So you're like, all right, I'm going to work on, you know, changing my life. And so for the next like week, you're so super aware of not stepping on anyone's feet.
Mm-hmm.
But you never call me up,
right?
And or say, "How's your foot?" You know, right? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering. So I'm thinking, you know, there needs to be some effort to at least reconnect. I love how you say, like, sometimes what you need to do is just stay away from those that you've harmed.
Mm.
But you won't know that unless finding out what's going on with them. What's, you know, all right, the best thing for me to do is to stay away. But making reclaiming that connection, I think. When we talk about forgiveness, there's this ethicist, Robert Franklin, who I heard him give a talk where he used the term tragic reconciliation.
Hmm.
I don't know if anyone else has used it. I haven't seen it really fleshed out. I think there's a lot that can be done with it. But it's the idea of, you know, when you come back and try to reconcile, understanding that it's only going to go so far.
Right.
That there's always going to be a scar.
Well, but I think, I mean, and that's a really poignant phrase. I like that idea. But it's also assuming that there was a relationship there to begin with. I mean... Perhaps the like you're saying, it's
right.
There will always be a scar, and it will always be a bit tender, perhaps. And the aim maybe is not so much reconciliation, so much as how do we live in common, in a way that can be life giving to all.
So here's an issue that there was a relationship to begin with. I wonder, is it possible to have to wrong someone? Is it possible to have a wrong occur that is not relational in one way or another?
I think so. I mean, think back to all these Sikh men who are getting shot because they're mistakenly thought of as Muslim, as though that were okay. And so it's ignorance based on ignorance. So they're going and killing these random people or beating them. They don't know that guy. I mean, maybe it's a relationship with an idea. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, but but there's an obvious, like, that person has wronged the person they shot.
Right.
So there's a relation. The relationship has been created, even if.
I see. Yeah.
So I mean, really, it's to get even more basic. I'm like, is sin ever not relational?
No, I don't think so. Because even if the relationship is between you and yourself, or you and God, or you and the earth, I think that's true. Because you're always trying to negotiate that.
Yeah. So there's always going to be some kind of relationship, relational context in which. So forgiveness always has to have a give and take.
Well,
to a degree, right?
It's in the word itself.
Is it?
Giving.
Oh, right. I guess that's in that word, huh?
Hmm.
I have to spell it out. I'm not a good speller.
But I think that's a good point. That's a good point. But I think it has to do with the relational context. But that can only take place well, I think, if other work has been done, both in the terms of the one who has been harmed and the one who's doing the harm.
Yeah.
And because the work that... is done on the side of the one who's offering forgiveness is a whole different piece of work. And a lot of research has been done on that. But those are, I think, they're pretty distinct processes.
Now, Sundin, you've been working a lot on our relationship with creation.
Yes.
Do you want to, and have you been like trying to look at how do we understand our looking for forgiveness?
I guess I'm thinking more about that. How do we deal with the negative? Like, what do we do with this stuff that we don't want? Whether it's, you know, in the liberation theology speak, it would be the poor, those with their backs against the wall, the disinherited, as Howard Thurman would say. You know, what do we do with waste people, waste land, waste things that we don't want to think about? Mm. I mean, Zizek has this whole kind of idea about how you can know about different people in different parts of the world based on their toilets. and how we deal with our own refuse.
Right. And that's so really these are telling.
We don't want to talk about. I mean, like, pardon me and all your listeners, but, you know, some cultures want to inspect it and some want it to disappear and never see it. And,
right.
You know, so, I mean, here in this country, we use a lot of fresh potable drinking water, which is a rare and precious resource
right.
To flush our waste away. What is away? Where is that? What we act as though away was a reality. And
right.
I guess I want us to embrace the idea that there is no away. Nothing goes away. We keep living with it, whether we are conscious of it or not. We keep living with these people that we wish would go away, or these ideas that we wish would go away,
right.
or this stuff that we want to just shove under this increasingly lumpy rug, or in this, you know, how do we live in this common home? Because nothing goes away. So until we can recognize that and embrace that, and do so in ways that are smarter and more collectively life-giving, then we're not doing ourselves or anyone any favors.
Right. So, and I like the theological turn on that, because we can say, well, that's just environmentalism and, you know, ecology, you know, which is fine. You know, that's just.
But yeah, go ahead.
But no, the theological term in bringing in the idea of forgiveness says that we are partially responsible or greatly responsible for those dark areas, those places that we don't want to talk about, the places that we try to ignore, pretend don't exist. We are responsible for those things, those places. So what do we? How do we start to reconcile?
Right. And how do we, I mean, in the language of the, you know, liberation theologians, I mean, how do we recognize that that is probably what's closest to the heart of God? And where are we if we refuse to see that or recognize that or just want to be blind to it? There's a woman in Haiti named Sasha Kramer who does composting toilets.
Oh, good.
And she's been doing composting toilets for years before.
Before it was cool?
I guess it was cool when they were called outhouses, but she's been doing. She began this as a biologist, and she went to Haiti. This is before the earthquake and everything that happened there. So she's been there for a long time, and she quickly made the link between what she would refer to as discarded land and discarded people. People didn't have safe water to drink because they don't have a safe place to use the restroom, and so. She began partnering with local people, and they build these composting toilets that create a source of fertilizer, because Haiti is one of the most naturally abundant places on earth. But if you look at it, it's utterly deforested because the people are poor. They have been completely marginalized by the global community for all of their history.
Yeah,
because they were a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Because heaven forfend, black people have freedom when the United States still had slavery. So, I mean, they were just cut off from the world community and consistently punished, and they still are suffering that. And so she was trying to figure out, how do we reclaim lives and land in a way that shows that each matter? And so they use literal waste products, and they then fertilize gardens, and they have these really fecund, beautiful, lush gardens. I mean, if you look at Haiti and the Dominican Republic from the air, you can see the DR full of trees, Haitians cutting down mahogany to make charcoal to sell to the Dominican Republic. Do they want to do that? No. Do they have new choices? No. And so they're trying to say, you know, people will make better choices if they have choices. And so through this process of composting toilets, they do this sanitation work that restores dignity to people and to the land. And so how do we, I mean, I think that that's part of reflecting the divine in all creation, is how do we maintain and preserve God's dignity in all these places, even in the places where we may be disinclined to recognize it. And so that's part of that work of, I mean, I would say, of repentance, of returning, of restoration.
Right. And so and that's so part of what we are called to do, you know, as individuals, is to look at the ways in which we participate, which by existing we participate in the wounding of the world.
And so how can we be more conscious of that and be a part of that healing? Because these things, the wounds do happen.
Yeah.
But, and again, it's all of this is just this ongoing process. I think what is important is that we get away from this one-and-done mindset. And in the same way of, I think, as practicing Christians, we have ongoing life practices. I mean, maybe you've said a special prayer at one time that is your ticket into heaven. But I think God is a lot more interested in what we do day in and day out. I mean,
saying, you mean the Jesus prayer isn't enough?
I think it can open a door, but an open door doesn't mean you walk through.
Right.
And so, you know, I think for some people that is very meaningful, and it can serve a purpose, but it doesn't serve a life.
It's only
purpose.
A start. It's a start.
And so I think in the same way, if I say, oh, I'm sorry, then we're done and we're finished. If we, you know, it's not about doing something once. It's about this ongoing practice of how do we do this well together? Because we are in relationship. And I mean, we're going to have more and more people and fewer resources and less water and more heat. And we know that when that the temperature rises, even by a degree or two, wars increase.
Right.
Human conflict is intimately linked to the temperature and access to resources. And this is not going to change. And this is, if we don't start thinking about this now, it's not going to go away. We're just going to be perpetually surprised by chaos and devastation. And so we can get with it and start to prepare in advance. Everyone needs an arborloo in their backyard. It's the moral of the story.
What's an arborloo?
An arborloo is my husband's favorite of the composting toilet systems that Sasha Kramer offers. She has a whole array of them, so that the communities she works with can choose.
A catalog? Is there a catalog?
There may be a catalog, but they have kind of like 3 degrees, and the arborloo is essentially a small tent with a hole in the ground and a bucket of sawdust and dirt.
Okay.
And so one
goes.
Uses it and then fills it with dirt, and then when the hole is full, you plant a tree and you move the little tent and you move on.
Oh, yeah. Just like that.
Just like that.
That's pretty simple.
Arborloo.
Folks, put one in your backyard. So here's
your neighbors will love it.
They will. They will thank you.
Well, they will when you give them cherries from that tree.
Yeah, I think all the trees you'll grow. You know.
How do they do it? Those neighbors? I just can't figure it out. Their garden's always so lush. What happens there in the nighttime? There's some rustling in the garden.
In the nighttime. High fences. You just need a high fence. So another theological term
okay.
I want to throw out there is sanctification.
All right.
Because that idea, you know, so we have like salvation and justification. Those are like kind of more that once and done thing. Like, you know, I am saved. I am justified to be at God's side. All that stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Blah, blah, blah. Sanctification has this process to it. Of the sense of being sanctified. Not I am, I know there are some who say I am sanctified and another once I am holy now and finished. But especially.
Is that like my housemate who was told me that he had achieved nirvana? And I was like, is that why you can't clean the kitchen?
Is that why? Yeah. Once you achieve, you're like, I am above this.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Those people are out there. They're wrong.
I'm just saying Christians don't have a monopoly on,
on self-righteousness.
Being sanctified. Yeah, but so that idea that it's an ongoing...
It's an ongoing thing. Catholics are really good with it, with that idea of that kind of habitual grace that grows you into the person God's calling you to be. So this idea of being able to say, the prayer for sanctification should come out of this sense of contrition.
Mm.
It shouldn't be like, God, I'm pretty good, but, you know, see, do what you can with this, but there's not much more you can do. Instead, saying, God, I realize my faults and my shortcomings. I see my failings, and I'm looking... I'm throwing myself to you for your grace to make me, to mold me into the person that you want me to be, right? And so we usually think about that, not we, but oftentimes that's put in context of pietism, help me to read the Bible more and to pray more, you know, that thing, not eat chocolate, it's Ash Wednesday, right? Don't give up chocolate for Lent, that's foolish, unless it gets in the way of your relationship with Christ. If chocolate gets in the way of your relationship with Christ, then give it up.
But, isn't there a song about a chocolate Jesus?
I hope so.
There is. I'll sing it to you later.
Okay, good. All right. Good. But to bring in this context of our relationship with the earth, because it can be overwhelming, and it often is when we hear this, like, you know, we are a part of the problem and we've got to change everything. People are like, that's so much. And it's so overwhelming that I'm just not going to do anything. We're paralyzed with fear.
Well, that's where I think this idea of composting is really helpful, because it all comes back to what we're doing right here and to talk about our very particular physical body needs. I mean, I think as Christians, we to our own detriment, miss the link of the gift of incarnation, which says that bodies really matter.
Right.
We're not this spirit over here that's good and great and this dirty, debased human body form. No.
So you're anti-Hellenic dualism.
I am. I am.
Okay, good. I'm writing you down for that.
but I think that misperception has really messed up a lot of Christians, because that's part of the reason why I think it's taken a while for us to care about the earth, because we're setting our sights on the next one. I'm thinking, well,
right.
Why do we think God is going to trust us with that one if we can't get it right here? What about this on earth as it is in heaven? On earth, like, get it right here, folks. Why do you think you're going to be, you know, given the Cadillac if you can't even, like, take care of the hoopty? And
the hoopty.
You know what your first car looked like.
I do.
And so, because I'm still driving it. Yeah. And
sad. Go ahead.
But I think if we can embrace these things, yes, you talked about it in terms of contrition, but I think it's also in terms of recognizing the value and dare I say, the beauty of it. I mean, you read Julian of Norwich. She has this very earthy, physical theology where she actually talks about, she talks about the beauty of defecation and how in God's wisdom the human body was made like a purse that opens when the time is right and then it closes again.
That's great.
And it's a very graceful way of talking about these things, but this is the potty podcast for you.
Yeah,
but,
apparently, yeah.
I'll
put a disclaimer.
but that we lack that general comfort with our own physicality, our own waste, much less someone else's, and that which we just want to be done with. We want it to just go away.
So the sanctification idea, why I'm introducing, is saying start small.
Yes, and not, I mean, it absolutely can be overwhelming if you think, oh my word, I can't save the cosmos. No, you probably can't.
You're not supposed to.
That's not
your
job.
God's going to do it.
That's right. You have been given this body and this patch of earth and this time and this family and this community. Work right there. I mean, you don't have to go on a mission trip to somewhere else, although that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's meaningful, but I suspect that there's a great deal of work that can be done that you can dig into right where you are.
Nice, very nice. That's our best pun.
I thought you said you had a whole bunch of them.
I do, but
did you get to like string them up at the end?
No, I'm just most of them involve profanity. So I'm gonna save them for the yeah, for the clip afterwards. For the spoof reel.
There you go.
So why don't we give some tangible, like, real, like, you know, so I think we're at a good spot with the idea of the forgiveness. Because, you know, saying, like, first, we are wounding the earth.
Hmm.
And that wounds God's heart. I don't think we've made that direct connection. I mean, it's kind of been there, but let's say it.
Okay.
Folks, when we wound the earth, we are wounding God's heart, because God created this.
Right.
And this isn't a pantheism kind of thing, like God is in creation. You may go there, I don't know.
Well, I would say panentheism.
I knew you would.
That's how I roll.
but
I do think that, I mean, if you want to anthropomorphize this stuff, God's fingerprints are all over the place.
Right.
And it is the height of hubris for humans to think that God had no care about all of creation until humans rolled up on the scene some not so many years ago.
Right. Obviously, you're not a New Earth creationist either.
Yeah, you know, 7 days. but it just seems that of course, God is concerned about all of this.
Yeah.
And was it Jay McDaniel talks about how we ought to have a covenant with the strange, and how he kind of proposes, I mean, I would use the word wonder, but the maybe the first step to having that appreciation is to say, I mean, what about compound eyes? I mean, that's pretty remarkable. And I mean, what about a dog's sense of smell? What about echolocation? And if I were a bat, I mean, if we can just like go to the deep sea and look at some, there's some pretty, do you know, I mean, octopuses, I have a 5-year-old, so we look at.
Octopuses are amazing. They're amazing. Yeah.
They express their emotions through the color of their skin. And if you have, you know, like, Helga, the octopus on your right side, and Olga on the left, and you want to, if an octopus wants to express joy to Olga and rage to Helga, it can do that with two different colors on both sides simultaneously. They can regenerate tentacles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Octopus are amazing. They are amazing.
Anyway.
Ugly.
Well, you should hear what they say about you, Brother Malone.
That's fair.
They would say, with those little, those human eyes.
I totally would accept it from them.
Yeah.
So,
that covenant with the strange, that sense of, I think if we just start paying attention, then we'll, that's the first step. And I think maybe having a sense of, I would say, sanctity in the whole world, like, you know, the sacredness, rather.
Right, and treating the earth well is treating people well.
Right, because where were you 5 years ago?
I was here.
Right? Physically, okay, no, but your physical stuff, but like, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Oh, I had millet.
You had millet?
Okay. I actually had millet.
Right, and so morning, that's clearly a grain, and it came from the earth, and where was that? I mean, like, what were those
from minerals? Bob's Red Mill.
Right, and Bob, you know, so it's like, that even so long ago? So are, I mean, just, you know, the etymology, human, humus, humble, humility, I mean, it all comes from the same stuff. So we literally are what we eat, and you know, Gustavo Gutierrez says we drink from our own wells. Oh, but now, maybe we ought not, because right now, as humans, I mean, animals know not to drink where they use the bathroom, but humans aren't doing a very good job of it. So apologies to Gustavo Gutierrez. Perhaps we ought not drink from our own wells
right
now.
I mean, that book was meant as an apology to the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith. So that's why we're... But
the point is that we have to have this this appreciation and respect for where we are and where we come from and where it goes.
But also, I mean, I think, you know, as we become a more of a global community, when I leave my car running at the drive-thru, it has an effect on people at the other side of the world in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the better I do to take care of the earth, that's a way of me helping other people. Sometimes it's a lot of steps to get there, but it affects humanity. And so it's not just like, well, I'd rather think about people, so I can't think about the earth. No, this is about people.
Well, it's stewardship, and I think that we have to just recognize that we are linked as humans, as humans and animals, as humans in the earth. Yeah, that it's not these discrete boxes that we can put one another in.
So let's give some specific advice for folks to change their life today. Right now. So what was the Arbor Lou?
It sounds like, you know, call this number on your screen.
Yeah, right, I know, right? Actually, yeah. And if you call today for $15, we will give you the booklet that will change your life for the better. I'm not giving you a number to call, though. All right, That's how secret this is.
So change your life today. Don't use a plastic fork once and throw it away.
Can you use it twice and then throw it away?
If you're going to use it twice, just use a real fork.
It is a real fork. It's just plastic.
Use one that you can use again.
Oh, okay.
You know, use your granny's silverware.
I mean, as long as she's not using it at the time.
All right. If she gifted it to you, that would undermine everything that we've talked about.
Give me that fork, Grandma.
Respect your grandmother. Don't buy her tchotchkes. Yeah. Just go visit her and don't take her forks. Unless she gives them to you.
These are the lessons for this podcast.
Sound. Very sound.
I mean, and this is free. That's what's amazing.
And I think a lot of folks get really overwhelmed. They think, oh, well, I'm not going to start riding my bike everywhere. And you know, it's just small things. Just small things.
Cloth napkins,
which is frankly civilized and classy.
It is classy.
Right?
Although not in my house, because our napkins are used so much that they're now getting ratty. But
well, you can just, you know, the writ die.
That's what I got to do. Mm-hmm. Or I can get my mom to buy me new napkins. Mom, buy me new napkins.
Buy your own napkins, Jonathan.
I know, that's probably what she'd say.
Use your sleeve like you always have. Yeah. I don't know that that's what your mother said like at all. My
no, not even close, but that's all right.
Mrs. Malone, I'm sorry.
She's fine. She doesn't listen.
She doesn't tell you, but she does.
I know, she does, actually. Only when she visits me, then she listens so that she can say, I've been listening to your podcast, like you listen to one on the way here. So that you can make me feel like I'm still important to you. But you have 9 grandkids. I know where I stand. I'm very realistic about it.
All right.
So yeah, I mean, cloth napkins. And I said, like, leave your engine running. You know, this is, you know, don't use the drive-thru. It actually it does use a lot more gas. Just pull in, stop, walk in, get the stuff.
Just eat with people. Sit down and eat together. Like, just do that first.
What if you don't know him?
Well, that's a good way to do it. I mean, Jesus was always radically eating with all kind of people. But I think as a family, as a human, if your family consists of you in your apartment, at least eat sitting down without a screen on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so just maybe regain the sanctity of a meal. Taste your food. Slow down.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Fresh food is always good.
It is. And just to be mindful, I mean, maybe you can't grow your own food, but you could go to a CSA. You could... There are ways that you could do this. You can.
Farmers markets are good, and they're everywhere now.
They are everywhere, and you know, and so I don't think it. I'm not advocating for people to start flagellating themselves. I don't think that that helps either.
Good. Phew.
Yeah. No. I don't.
I was.
but I think a lot of people think.
I was at
well,
that place.
They think well. You know, you have to do these big things. Yeah, big things are great, but small right. things also. You know, well, do things that are realistic right. that you're actually going to do.
Here's something else I want to recommend. Go for hikes.
Yeah.
You know, so our listeners who are in Rhode Island, there are a lot of places for nice, short, easy hikes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of wildlife management areas or Audubon trails. Because mm-hmm. I think when you see nature closer to what it was originally. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Rhode Island, you're never going to see what it really was like. We've kind of ruined that.
Mm.
But you, even seeing it closer, you do get this deeper appreciation
right.
for, you know, how things could be
right.
and, you know, how far we've gone.
Well, I think even just this, I think the cycles of, I mean, if you do grow your own food, it's just mm-hmm. a tomato plant, or you can get one of those basil plants at the grocery store and just,
yeah.
you know, the way that it regenerates. I mean, I'm always amazed at the capacity of the earth to heal, to come back.
Yeah, give it time.
It will. I mean, there are things that we have obviously taken too far, but, you know, between the Koreas, there's this no-go zone
mm-hmm.
that is now a flourishing wildlife habitat because people aren't there.
Oh, nice.
And so there's critters that have not been seen for a long time because it's a combat zone for humans. And so the wildlife is just like, woo! Because it doesn't care about these geopolitical lines we've drawn.
Right.
A weed or a plant will cast itself wherever it chooses to go, as will a grasshopper. And so it's actually this very verdant
Excellent.
Ecosystem
Nice.
Because of our intractability as human beings. And our inability to get along with one another is actually kind of a boon for that part of creation.
That's grace.
Right, right. And so that's what I think it is. I mean, and I'm from West Texas, as you mentioned.
Right.
And we have a lot of heat and very little water.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, our family farm burned in some wildfires.
Mm.
And so we were out rebuilding fences. And this is a place where it hadn't rained. It had maybe rained an inch or two in about a year or two. So there was very little moisture. And most plants there have some kind of thorn or bramble or bristle, as do the animals and some of the people. And
right.
Yes.
Nice. Very nice.
Talking about myself. But when you look at those things, I would look at this, you know, it had burnt. There had been no rain, and I would look down, and there would still be a little bitty flower on it.
Mm.
In defiance of all logic, like, where did that come from? And if you were contrarian enough to want to
step on it
or yank it up, you would find a taproot as long as an adolescent's leg. I mean, this huge root reaching down for this teeny little bitty flower. Like, why that beauty?
Right, right.
It's just, we would think superfluous, you know? So you would think if you're just striving to survive, but it still does it. It survives, and it does so beautifully.
Nice.
Like, what does that, what do we do with that?
We write sermons about it. That's what we do.
Mm. God
so,
willing.
Folks, take care of the earth. That's how you're taking care of others. But think about it in those terms of forgiveness.
Yeah, and it's a process. It's just something
yeah.
that we... So, you know, and I think it's be realistic about what you're really going to do, and
yeah.
and don't beat yourself up if it doesn't happen the first time. Start again the next day.
That's
know?
Right.
Just
part of grace.
Yeah. Yeah. Was thank it? Goodness.
All right. Good. Good conversation.
So, now you know everything you need to know about the right kind of toilets to make. Seriously, if anyone uses the toilet, the Arbor-Loo that Jamie mentioned, let me know. I would be really curious on how that works for you, and I hope it works well. I hope this was a cleansing podcast for you. I hope that you found that it created a lot of good soil to work with or something. I don't know. I've got nothing else. Even that, those were really bad, and I am sorry for that. If you want to send a comment about this podcast or any other podcast to me, or I can pass it on to Jamie, you can send those to 12enough@gmail.com. Come to the show, to the webpage where you can find the show notes or past shows, and that's 12enough.com. and go to our Facebook page, Facebook/12enough, to find out about different things that's happening in the world. And I think that's it. I think I've said everything I need to say. I'm excited because today we're having a live show in East Greenwich. By the time this gets posted, it'll be too late to hear about it. But I hope you hear that we're having a live show and you feel somewhat disappointed that you missed it. Or you say, I was there and it was great. I'll tell you right now, it's going to be great. As always, thank you very much for listening. Twelve Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your hosts were Jonathan Malone, the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island, and Jamie Washam, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in America in Providence, Rhode Island. The thoughts, ideas, opinions, notions, rantings, railings, bad jokes, especially the bad jokes about compost or any other kind of things that were said on this podcast, they do not reflect their churches, their denominations, their families, the state of Rhode Island, the state of Texas, the state of Wisconsin, the state of bliss, the state of euphoria, the state of anything else that might come to mind. These are their own ideas. This is their podcast.